It's been a long week. We took a trip to Waffle House this week. We said goodbye to Downton Abbey, and we are all still in recovery from Super Tuesday. So now it's time to sit back, relax, and celebrate Friday. It's time for the break room.
This type of stereotype that Asian Americans are all hardworking and smart is being normalized.
The big MARTA funding bill is now dead for this year. The legislation would have helped finance an $8 billion rail expansion.
I walked in being like, this is disgusting. And I left being like, I love a cat cafe.
Joining us in the break room, Jess Merriman is the founder of MomoCon and director of animation at DragonCon. Great to see you. Are you heading down to GnomeCon this weekend?
No, I'm actually going to the North Atlanta Sci-Fi Expo in DeKalb Mall, or Decatur Mall.
I didn't even know there was such a thing. We also have Democratic strategist Howard Franklin. Hey, Howard.
Hey, how
it's
are
good
you?
To see you back.
You too.
Former NPR correspondent Kathy Lohr. Hey, Kathy.
Good morning.
And Jeff Breedlove is back with us, communication director for DeKalb County Commissioner Nancy Jester. It's good to see you again also.
Good morning.
All right. We talked earlier in the show about the GOP divide over Donald Trump. If he does indeed become the Republican Party nominee, he will probably have to gain major points with the black community if he wants to win the presidency. PBS host Tavis Smiley says that could happen. Smiley wrote a column in USA Today that says how quietly the black elite have been when Trump has been taken to task for his racially driven language. And when it comes to Trump's appeal, Smiley says, for many black voters, Trump is no Mitt Romney, meaning that they might. Howard, you're already laughing.
Yes.
You don't buy it.
Not at all. I think plenty of people of all colors are taking Trump to task for any number of the crazy things he's been saying. Plenty of black folks among those people as well. I don't think there's any conspiracy or group that's waiting to endorse or support Trump from Democratic voters or black voters.
Jeff, could you imagine minorities turning out for Trump?
For full disclosure, I'm supporting Ted Cruz and so is Commissioner Jester, so I don't want to mislead anybody. But I will say this. This is an unusual campaign, and to be objective as I can possibly be, Donald Trump is doing something that Bill Clinton did in 1996. He's talking about jobs. And I do think that non-traditional voters, there might be some folks that are so desperate for a job that they might consider him. And I think they would cross demographic lines. So I do think if they do, it would be someone who is voting for a single issue out of desperation.
I don't think it's happening.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a lot of white supremacists, the David Duke thing over the KKK. That
30 students, black students, were just thrown out of Valdosta.
In Valdosta at a Trump rally.
And this public policy polling did a survey in South Carolina recently, and 38% of Trump supporters said they wished the South had won the Civil War. That doesn't sound like black voters. 70% said they wished that the Capitol still flew the Confederate flag. And 80% said they supported the Muslim ban. Those don't sound like African-American voters to me.
Jess, you don't buy it either?
I don't know. And I don't know how it'll play out in the general election. Say it's Trump versus Hillary. A lot of people credit Hillary's strength in the black community as a reason that, like, Bernie Sanders hasn't gotten traction in certain places. So I don't know what that means for, like, a Trump versus Hillary general election. So.
Yeah. If it's down to Trump versus Hillary, a lot of the African-Americans may go with Hillary Clinton. Okay, so diversity. Since we're talking about diversity, let's hearken back to the Oscars. Remember that? Host Chris Rock addressed the lack of diversity in the Oscars all throughout the show, mostly with jokes. But one of his jokes has drawn a lot of backlash. During the ceremony, he invited three Asian children, adorable children, onto the stage. He introduced them as accountants from PricewaterhouseCoopers. That's the company that tabulates the Oscar vote results.
They sent us their most dedicated, accurate, and hardworking representatives. So I want you to please welcome Ming Zhu, Bao Ling, and David Moskowitz. It's okay. Thanks, guys. Thanks a lot. If anybody's upset about that joke, just tweet about it on your phone that was also made by these kids.
Okay, not everybody thought that was funny. Here is Huffington Post campus editor-at-large Tony Berteau. He spoke with CNN.
When stereotypes like this paint a broad stroke over the Asian American community, it really delegitimizes a lot of the discrimination and struggles that Asian Americans in America face today still. Just as people say that anti-Semitism doesn't exist, people also say that anti-Asian racism doesn't exist. And that's why this stereotype is really problematic.
Did any of you watch it and were upset by this particular joke?
I think it just fell really flat, and I think it was disturbing in a funny way because he was making this point that minorities are underrepresented black minorities, and it just kind of, so what about Latinos, Asian? I mean, that's the question. Does it nullify everything he said earlier? And then I'm not so sure that it does that, but I just think it was a bad joke.
Bad taste. Yeah. Howard?
I mean, I didn't watch it. I have seen clips. You know, entertainment and these sort of shows oftentimes have jokes that just don't go so well. I don't know if it's something to be up in arms about, but, you know, I'm sure there are funny jokes and there are bad jokes, and that happens every time we have an award show.
Those were not those children's names, by the way, obviously.
Obviously.
Fake names.
I don't know that it was quite as bad as Ali G's Asian genitals joke.
Yes. Supposedly, the Oscars did not know that he was going to come out in the character of Ali G, but yes, that fell pretty flat also. Jeff, what'd you think?
Well, you know, for those that don't know, we have a mixed race family, and our son is from China, and we're blessed and so thankful that he is our son. So having that in our home, you know, I think it was a joke that fell flat, and I think it was in poor taste, and I do think it sort of diminishes your serious message when you use, especially children, as props to try to make a point.
It's a punchline.
Yep. Right, as a punchline. Yes, yeah. So I do think that was in poor taste, and I think it's probably something that he regrets.
We have just a couple minutes left. This past weekend, our senior producer, Lindsay Foster Thomas, got married. So congratulations to Lindsay. Her wedding ceremony took place at a North Carolina courthouse. That's pretty boring compared to this next one. Other couples like to have big ceremonies. One recently held theirs inside the Georgia Aquarium.
Under the sea. Under the sea.
The couple exchanged vows surrounded by fish, whale sharks, and manta rays. A large crowd gathered on dry land, and they held an I do sign up. So the question in this last minute here is, have any of you ever wanted a kind of unique wedding like that? Jeff?
So I have. And my wife and I have been married 23 years, but we've had the chance to go to Las Vegas. And at the Hilton, they had the Star Trek experience. And and you could do a wedding. And I told her if we ever did it again, if we ever renewed our vows, I want to do a Star Trek wedding.
I'm Celeste Headlee. This is On Second Thought. We are hanging out in the break room. Jess Merriman's with us. She's the founder of MoMAcon and director of animation at DragonCon. Democratic strategist Howard Franklin is here. Former NPR correspondent Kathy Lohr. And Jeff Breedlove is the communication director for DeKalb County Commissioner Nancy Jester. Thanks, guys. We also want to say thank you to the Savannah Coffee Roasters. They donated the coffee that is fueling our break room guests' brains this morning. It's my favorite flavor. They are online at savannahcoffee.com. You can find them there. Before we move on to cats, has anybody else wanted a destination weird wedding?
I didn't have a weird wedding, but I got married a couple years ago in the North Georgia mountains. Beautiful, but
that's not weird.
No,
but Howard's not married.
No, yeah. We're working on it, but not quite. Not
on behalf of all convention and festival organizers, I just want to ask people, please don't ask us to host your weddings. It sounds really cool, but it's a hassle, and please don't. Just please don't.
Okay, public service message from the founder of MoMAcon. Are any of you cat people, cat lovers?
No
cat lovers at the table? All dog people?
Dogs all the way.
Well, there are coffee shops popping across up all over the country that are cat friendly. Cats and their owners love comfort and food.
No, we don't gnaw on our kitty. Leave Minnie Mr. Bigglesworth alone. Just love him, stroke him.
In Atlanta, there will soon be a new place where you can eat with your cat. A cat cafe opens its doors this summer. Who's going?
I don't think I'd be going.
If I do a puppy,
if there was a puppy cafe, I'd be there.
But the dogs would eat all the food.
I think it's only fair. I'm not a cat lover, but I think, obviously there's really great parks for puppies and for dogs. How else do you get your cat out? You don't see people walking their cats on leashes, so restaurants cool.
But they're adoptable cats. Yeah, they're not our cat. You don't bring your cat.
Oh, well, then never mind.
Since this is radio, I'll say something instead of shaking my head. I mean, I thought about this, and like, I am a dog person, but I would go. I mean, if friends wanted to go, and I think it's wonderful that it's to promote adoption, and I know it's an entrepreneur, and I hope they have success in the market, and I think for people that want that experience, I think they should have that experience. And I would certainly go, and I hope they succeed.
It's a secret way to take your enemies that have cat allergies and take them out in one fell swoop.
I know this great new restaurant. You'll love it. That is awful. That is very, very awful. I don't endorse that. Certainly, all of those out there listening, I know we've got some cat lovers out there in the on second thought sphere. So let us know your thoughts if you'd go to the cat cafe or not. You can tweet us at OST Talk or post on Facebook. Well, when you go to that cat cafe, hopefully you'll be hearing a lot of this and not this. Chick-fil-A has a new challenge for its customers. The Atlanta-based fast food chain wants people to stop using cell phones while they're eating. So the company has put these boxes on each table. And if you eat your whole meal without touching the phones in the box, you get free ice cream. So what you're supposed to do is everybody at the table puts their phones in the box. And if you make it to the end of the meal without touching them, you get free ice cream. Could any of you make it?
Do they have an honor system that...
No, they watch you.
Oh, they do watch you. So it's like a home monitor.
Well, I think they just keep an eye out.
This sounds like a program for very fast meals. Like I could wolf down like a 12-piece chicken nuggets in about 6 minutes. And
right. It's terrible for your health, Howard.
I'm just saying.
Just for free ice cream, you would do that?
Sure, absolutely.
So we're bribing people to basically put their
cell phone. No, it's a reward system. Boy, you guys are so cynical.
Okay, I am a professional communications director. I love Chick-fil-A chicken. I still have no idea what their ice cream tastes like. I failed miserably.
I have failed.
It's not really ice cream. It's called ice dream, it is lower calorie. And frankly, I don't think it's that good, but that's just my opinion.
Oh, we're going to get complaints, Jess.
Send your tweets, too.
But I also, in all fairness, want to blame squarely, and everybody knows I love Superboy Jack if you see me on Facebook. I want to blame Jack for part of our failure as a family, too. It's hard with a teenager to convince them to put that smartphone down for the meal. And our family has tried. We've had fun with it, and we've done it at other restaurants, but we failed miserably.
I would like to suggest that everyone try for a while having meals without your cell phone. It is not easy, but what a difference it makes.
Yeah, my husband and I are adults, and we still have to have the rule of putting it down at dinner.
Yeah, it's tough.
And something will happen, and we'll,
They've done studies that show even if you have a cell phone near you in the room, even if it's not your own and you never touch it, it still lessens the quality of your conversation.
Wow.
Just having the cell phone in the room with you. So, you know, kudos to Chick-fil-A. We'll have to find out if that works or not. Since we're talking about cell phones, there was a recent study published in the journal Computers in Human Behavior that says text messages that end with a period are perceived as less sincere. So how many of you actually put a period at the end of your texts?
Perfect punctuation every time.
You put a period at the end
of
your...
I guess we're getting to a place where text message, social media, chat, et cetera, is so informal, but I'm just used to keeping it really formal.
Are you going to change based on this?
This probably explains why people don't respond to my text messages. Right?
I use a lot of question marks and exclamation points. Which this study said exclamation points are perceived as more sincere somehow, which is kind of strange. But if it's three sentences, you put a punctuation mark in the middle, maybe.
Yeah, they mean at the very end of a text message if you put a period.
And
I think
it's more of an exclamation that I do for every text.
I feel like it gives a serious tone, and I think I don't know about the sincere nature of it, but anytime I put a period in any kind of communication that's like a short communication, like a text message or something like that, sometimes you'll have people perceive it as a negative. Like you're being serious or harsh with them. So sometimes you put a little emoji at the end to lighten it up.
Oh, there you go.
I think that's,
Well, let's ask our communications director here.
So I'm a huge fan of the voice text. And so sometimes it doesn't do that.
Voice to text.
But I love the emojis. I love the smiley, the different expressions and the flags and all that kind of stuff. And so I'll use those a lot.
But do you put a period at the end of
it? Not always. But I agree. I very much agree that sometimes people misinterpret. So you do have to do things to lighten the tone sometimes so they don't misinterpret your
message. We're putting our own interpretations on these texts. I mean, it's our own values, our own. Everybody's saying, oh, that person must be angry because they didn't put it.
But that's the majority.
Smiley face, you know.
The majority of people said it was less sincere.
It wasn't that big of a study. And it was with young,
says the journalist.
And it was young people. It was college-age people.
who do most of the texting in the United States. This is another great thing for all of you out there to weigh in on. Tweet us at OSD Talk and put a period at the end of your text. Hey, why not? Join the conversation happening at facebook.com/onsecondthoughtradio. It is Friday. We are hanging out in the break room. My guests are former NPR correspondent Kathy Lohr, whose voice you just heard. Jeff Breedlove is communications director for DeKalb County Commissioner Nancy Jester. Also with us is Howard Franklin, Democratic strategist, and Jess Merriman, who is the founder of MomoCon and director of animation at DragonCon. All right, let's talk about journalism. The importance and value of investigative journalism was celebrated in a big way Sunday when the film Spotlight won the Oscar for Best Original Screenplay and Best Picture. Here are producer Bly Pagan Faust and writer-director Tom McCarthy accepting those awards.
We would not be here today without the heroic efforts of our reporters. Not only do they effect global change, but they absolutely show us the necessity for investigative journalism.
We made this film for all the journalists who have and continue to hold the powerful accountable, and for the survivors whose courage and will to overcome is really an inspiration at all. We have to make sure this never happens again.
If you haven't seen Spotlight, it's about the Boston Globe and they're tracking down the evidence of sexual abuse within the Catholic Church. It is a great film. The thing is, we love to applaud these stories of heroic reporters who dig up evidence of corruption or abuse, but we don't, as Americans, actually want to pay for that. Many news outlets don't charge for their stories. They use ads, even when lots of money and time goes into the reporting. So where is the disconnect here? Kathy?
Well, I think people realize they need good journalism. They need these investigations, but I think, and they want to hold people accountable. But you're right; nobody wants to pay for it, so nobody sees it as their jobs, as the public that is consuming this to put the money forward to do it, and they don't realize it can take months, years,
millions of dollars
on these. I mean, they're teams of journalists.
Yeah, Howard.
Yeah, to me, the issue is bigger when you think about how the dollars are generated, revenue is generated around media. People watch cable television and they are willing to pay for that, but they'll watch network TV and see an advertisement. And they believe that if they go to Wall Street Journal or any website that's got news and they see an ad, they think it's being paid for by their attention. And they don't realize that maybe there's an outsized cost, I think, in a lot of cases for investigative journalism or things that go beyond, you know, what you're used to otherwise. It seems transactionally free, right? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I mean, newspapers are closing down all over the country.
Yes.
How do we bridge the disconnect?
But websites are proliferating, right? News isn't going anywhere.
But those aren't always based on actual reporting.
That's a fair point.
No, but like the Wall Street Journal charges, and so a lot of people don't even read it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I think right here in Atlanta, the folks at Cox with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and Greg was in here earlier, I think they've done a great job of experimenting over the past couple of years with platforms and medians, and then they changed the website, and there's now a website with more content on it that you pay for. And it's great, but there's still AJC.com that you don't have to pay for. And I love that our good reporters at the AJC are on Snapchat and Twitter. And I think that we're kind of in a historical phase where the news industry is working through it. And I think we're in the middle of it. But I do feel good about where we're going to emerge on the other side. And I think it's going to allow good investigative reporting to stay alive. And I think
I'm
doing a
little
good
more
job
cynical about that, because I'm sitting here watching all of these overseas bureaus close down and people shut down their investigative units. It can cost $500,000 to over $1 million, like I said, to do one investigation. Jess?
Well, I think it might be a transformative thing. If you look at things that have become popular culture media that are essentially journalism. Making a Murderer on Netflix is a really interesting example of taking something that at its heart, I guess, is kind of journalistic and kind of documentary.
Not really.
It's documentary. it's more popular and getting more traction than news articles are in some cases.
But that's the scary part, because it's not real. It's television.
It has no journalistic
It doesn't adhere to the journalistic ethics.
Integrity.
that most journalists follow. If you want to find out what those are, you can go to the Society of Professional Journalists, and there's a long ethics thing there. But this is part of the thing that worries me.
I do want to agree with you, though. One thing that really troubles me is the more and more we shut down international outlets in the United States. I mean, I love watching the BBC pretty much every night.
But and they're government supported.
And the government supported. So how do Americans get introduced to this global news, wonderful stories around the globe? And I hope that that's part of what happens, too, as the news outlets figure out how they stay.
Consolidation.
Yeah, it's consolidation. Yeah. But it's not, you know, even on something like as simple as, yeah, okay, a feature story.
Yes.
I covered the Fugees, which is an immigration team, and did a really sort of a just, you know, here's what they are. They're from all over Sudan and everywhere else in Africa, and they've come here. They're the, and the New York Times did a story. They spent a year working on this story, talking to the families. I got like a week to do my story. And that was with NPR, which is phenomenal. But it wasn't. I couldn't do nearly what somebody could have done in a month or a year. And that person eventually did a book on it and everything. But and I went back several times. But it's not the same. You don't have the same ability to get the stories of these real people. And I think that's what we're missing in this country now is that you don't get these profiles. You don't see what's going on. You get a very narrow scope.
I agree with those, all those comments, Kathy. I just think of looking at the global sort of media spectrum, I think the same thing people could say is happening to movies, which have been in a decline for years. You know, real music that used to be printed up on cassettes and now CDs also declining year over year. People want to stream it. They think it's free on YouTube. They don't realize the blood, sweat, and tears, the dollars and hours that go into producing that stuff. But they want to enjoy it all the same.
All right. Well, that's yet another thing we would love to get you to weigh in on as well. Of course, this is public radio, so all of you out there listening are supporters of public radio. I hope are supporters. Let's talk about festivals. That's a happier topic, right? We're coming up on festival season here in Georgia. We have Jess Merriman here, founder of MomaCon. DragonCon is coming later on. Next week, we will cover the Stopover Music Festival in Savannah. We'll be at the Savannah Music Festival as well. There's a Wild Chicken Festival in Fitzgerald. There's a Peanut Festival in Blakely.
Yes, of course.
So
has to be
before we go, let's talk. What's your favorite? What's the best festival that you've been to in the state? Kathy, one, choose one.
Rattlesnake and Wildlife Festival in Claxton. I couldn't help it. I interviewed a snake milker. I did a whole profile
that's
on
who
him.
Milks the venom
and they use it basically to come up with vaccines and different things to help
antidotes
blood clotting and antidotes and everything. So, and you know, it used to be where they got a lot killing snakes and they don't do that there anymore. But so it's just the most interesting. It's not, maybe not my favorite.
Howard?
I'm a little more traditional. I'm a Dogwood Festival guy. I'm in town Atlanta. This year is, I think, their 80th anniversary. Great to walk around. Good food, art, you know, family friendly.
Beautiful
amazing.
Trees.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan.
Okay. Jeff?
I got to cheat. I told you guys that, but the Vidalia Onion Festival, which is in Toombs County, it's wonderful. I've been to the Rattlesnake Roundup. It's really cool. And the Dragon Con Parade is a international classic that Atlanta's
awesome.
Blessed to have. So we have some great things in Georgia. And it's a big state with lots
Jeff
of great
Jeff works
festivals.
For a politician. He's not yes. choosing one. Jess, you can't choose one of your own.
I can't. I know. Aside from my own, I'm going to be a little boring, too. But Taste of Atlanta is my favorite event pretty much all year.
That's
and
a great one.
I hurt myself with food every single time.
Well, that's what a festival is kind of about,
just
right?
That's what it is.
I mean, that's what a festival is. And certainly we want to hear from all of you out there. It needs to be a festival you've been to that you have experience with. But tell us what is the best festival in Georgia. There are so many of them, so you can make the case for the one that you like. We're out of time in the break room today. I want to say thank you to all of my guests. Jess Merriman is founder of MomaCon and director of animation at DragonCon. Democratic strategist Howard Franklin, former NPR correspondent Kathy Lohr, and Jeff Breedlove is communications director for DeKalb County Commissioner Nancy Jester. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great
Happy
weekend.
Friday.
Happy
you
Friday.
Too.
Happy trails.
Happy trails for sure. If you want to weigh in on any of the things we talked about, including best festival in the state, call us at 404-500-9457 and leave a message. We're also on Twitter at OST Talk, and we're on Facebook. It's facebook.com/OnSecondThoughtRadio. For today and the week, that's On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headlee. Have a great weekend.